Hey Siri, call Vladimir Putin.
Calling Vladimir Putin.
Live from Nixon's birthplace, Orange County, California, it's Bad Libs, the only podcast that's 100% certified libtarded. And now, here are your hosts, Zach Miller and Brendan Woodruff.
All right. What's up, everybody? We are live. Welcome to the 100th episode of the Bad Libs podcast. I am your host, Brendan Woodruff.
I am also your host, rolling a joint of tropical cookies in the middle of our intro for our 100th episode, Miller.
What up? What up? Oh, man, we made it. 100 episodes.
That's crazy. we have one of our favorite Orange County OG bad libbers, the one and only Real Rich Holland, ladies and gentlemen, in the house.
What's up, everybody? Good morning.
Real Rich of the No One Right Way podcast, the tongue twister themed podcast.
We
have a whole bunch of drops with people that can't say the name.
the Roar Juror podcast.
Mm-hmm. We play them all together.
It's a great podcast, Bad Libbers. If you've never listened to the No One Right Way podcast, it is it's like if Sublime made a pop culture / current events podcast in like 92. That's the No One Right Way. It's like a bunch of like dub tech and like cool samples and shit. I love your guys' podcast. I think it's awesome.
If Eazy-E was still alive, he would be, funding my podcast.
That's real talk. Did you know Eazy-E, Rich? Or is that just one of those?
No, only one that I ever knew out of NWA was MC Ren.
Of course you knew MC Ren. The hoodest of the NWA members.
Yeah. the best rapper of all
of
them.
You think he's the best rapper out of NWA, dude?
Ice Cube's better. Sure. Ice Cube's better. Ice Cube.
Absolutely. Yeah,
Ice Cube's a lyricist and a storyteller. Like, he's got all that shit.
And Ice Cube basically wrote Easy Does It, which is like one of my favorite albums to ever come out.
It's Ice Cube and Ren. It's Ice Cube and Ren that wrote that stuff. And the DLC.
I'm not dissing Ren. I had Shock and Power and Kiss.
I mean, my personal favorite is Arabian Prince. So.
DLC wrote a lot of it after he got there, too.
That makes sense. But Easy, nobody had flavor like Easy. Easy was fucking great. I love
Easy was a character, like on top of everything.
Of that group, Easy would have been a star probably no matter what. Like if anything he put his energy into would have worked out, I think.
Yeah, probably.
He was a pretty intelligent cat. See coming what he saw coming and involve himself in it the way he did. Because he was the real street dude who fucking, didn't have the artistry background, but he took to it like a fish in water, man. He was just like, oh yeah, I could spit these rhymes and be a character. He's great.
Go ahead, Ren.
I was going to say, we have MC Ren on Political Jukebox. Attack on Babylon
song. Yeah, Attack on Babylon. That's from Shock the Hour, his Kill Whitey Apocalypse album. I like that album.
his last album that he did, Return of the Villain. That's when I met him. He released it on my old radio show.
Oh, that's what year was that?
2009.
Oh wow.
2008, 2009.
Man, remember when that sounded like way far in the future? Now it sounds way far in the past.
I know.
Yeah. It's
completely different era. Speaking of which, we need to jump into the business part of the podcast. You can follow us.
What are me and the two Jewish guys going to talk about today?
He's just doing plausibles right now, Rich. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought he was going to talk about the.
No, that's later.
It's coming.
Follow us at Bad Libs Pod on everything. All our links are at badlibspod.com. You can find me at Bad Libs Brendan, Zach at Zach Miller Dong, and we will be right back. All Okay, we are back.
Oh, that was freaky as hell.
So, obviously, this week was insane. So we're going to, in order to kind of keep, because Israel-Palestine, you could talk about for hours and hours and hours and hours. So I'm going to try and front load all the domestic lighter stuff first, and then we'll do the back half of the show. Will be all the heavy Israel-Palestine stuff. So first up, Tony Hinchcliffe got canceled.
is that fabulous political news? I guess we are.
Yeah, right, because you're a comedian and yeah.
Tony Hinchcliffe, let me tell this story. So okay, Tony Hinchcliffe is part of the Comedy Store, you know, crew. He runs Kill Tony at the Comedy Store, which has probably broke more talent over the last 5 years than any apparatus in the stand-up world. He directly pipelines talent to Joe Rogan and Joe Rogan Show and that whole camp. He's a legitimate gatekeeper. Whether or not you think he's funny or not has been up for debate. I don't even really know his act. I never have.
He's found his place of importance in the scene.
Right. And then these guys all went to Austin, where they basically all got crowns and they're like gods in Austin. So they're doing a show at some Austin room, and this Asian guy, I guess he's Chinese, introduces Tony Hinchcliffe to the show, and Tony calls him a and that was awkward, but like, I guess people thought it was some type of edgelord opening. He got a response on it, and then he stuck with it.
Yeah.
And it started getting Michael Richards-y, except he didn't keep saying the slur. He then followed it up with all these hack Asian jokes about soy sauce, and he did this like 1950s Chinese impression.
Hold up. So remember the Covington Catholic thing? And it was like, watch the whole video, bro. Remember that shit?
Yeah, is there a
whole video for this. It doesn't make it any better, but it does provide a little bit of context in terms of he wasn't just necessarily doing low-hanging like Asian accent jokes. He was referencing jokes that the previous comedian had done in the mock Asian. Doesn't make it any better, but it does. They weren't entirely out of nowhere.
Did you see the guy's set? I believe his name is Dang Fan. I could be wrong.
I did see his set. His whole set was like very much like the overall arcing point was stop Asian hate. And so then Tony Hinchcliffe goes on and is just mockingly racist because it's, you know, shocking. Not any better. I don't know if he crushed. Yeah, he did
that
great.
That guy's set was awesome.
I don't know if you know this, though, like mockery is a cornerstone of racism. It always has been. It doesn't make it any better. The fact like, oh, he was doing it for jokey jokes. Like, I'm sorry. No.
Well, went way too hard in the paint.
Yeah, you could have done like a joke where you just were like, Asians, am I right? Or something. If you were trying to ironically reference the stop Asian hate thing, you didn't need to go that and then dig in for five. He kept doing Asian jokes for like three minutes.
But I've talked about this for years, and people are dumb and they want to focus on the joke or the punchline and isolate that in its innocence while completely disregarding the premise. The premise is what matters. What's the point of the joke? What's the message you're trying to get across? And with those punchlines, the message is always Asian people are less than.
Yep.
Asian people are, you know, dumb, you know, uncivilized immigrants or whatever he's saying.
And
it's
in the in the context of the show, it's an Asian comedian doing a set based around stop Asian hate, and then a white comedian going up and being like, can't stop me from saying Asian jokes. You know, like.
It's just all around. And canceled isn't even really a thing. He's not going to get canceled. He lost his agent, but
you know, he'll still be able to book shows and stuff.
It's not like he's
going to lose many fans.
He lost access to certain parts of the West Coast infrastructure, but he got stronger in that new bubble they're creating and that bro alpha bubble they're creating that isn't just white boys, it's just mostly white boys, but there's a sprinkle of other ethnicities, but it's the overall mentality of like only the strong survive, like right is might, and like the ends always justify the means, and like it's just a joke, and it's like it's not.
He's not gonna miss any meals. He's not gonna miss a meal.
No, not even close. No.
He's just
gonna
get blocked out of certain parts of the coastal pipelines by other gatekeepers who don't fuck with him now.
He'll have to lay low online for a little bit, and then
yes, I think he should apologize. If he apologizes. Then I really, you know, whatever he works towards to do, I don't care what happens, but he's got to apologize.
Yeah.
Or at least address it in an adult fashion, like not just say, not go with the insurrection mentality of it just didn't happen or it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, just he's not saying anything at this point. He's just.
Which is he don't like me. Smart.
But, that dude don't like me.
I don't.
Tony really doesn't like you?
You guys remember Alligator Arms?
Yeah.
Alligator Arms, like 5-6 years ago, was like, hey, let's go to this thing called Kill Tony. I never heard of it.
Okay.
And he goes, it's hosted by Tony Hinchcliffe. And I'm like, okay, cool. We go out there, we wait for it. And I was thinking Tony Hinchcliffe was this weird character that, what's his name? Andy Kaufman used to do.
I don't know why I thought that.
Yeah. I thought that's who it was. So I was at the bar at the comedy store.
Kind of looks like Elvis. Yeah.
Tony Clifton.
I was at the bar at the comedy store.
Go ahead.
And Hinchcliffe was there, but I didn't know who he was. And the bartender, the one that looks like she's from Sopranos, was holding up wrestling trading cards to Tony, and Tony would name who the wrestler was. And I was standing there for like 3 minutes waiting on my drink, and she held up Ric Flair, and he goes, "That's Ric Flair." Woo! And I looked at him like in my mind, I'm like, "Oh, this is a gay dude. Like, no big deal, right?" But I was like, "Hey, man, if you say that like that in the South, they'll whoop your ass." And he looked at me and he's like, "What do you mean by that?" And I kind of felt awkward because I did fuck up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I was like, "You don't understand what I'm saying?" And he just walked away. And then a week later, I did a comedy contest and I did all right. And he was one of the judges in Hollywood. And he fucking destroyed me. He was like, "I've never seen anything so bad in my life. This is the worst thing I ever seen." And I was like, "Oh, you know what? I deserve that." You got me.
Speaking of Alligator Arms and being paraded at the comedy store, I did a roast battle with Alligator Arms and both of us bombed really hard. And then Al Madrigal was like, "That was the least funny thing I have ever seen in my entire life."
I don't know where Alligator Arms went.
He's an electrician. Arms. He was like a comedy rapper in the OC scene. Mm-hmm. He's out in the Inland Empire. He's an electrician. He's like got a wife and kid. You know,
yeah,
just living life.
Just doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Well, we'll see what happens with Senior Hinchcliffe. I think it was a epic blunder and a clear tell of who he is as a human being, but.
Yeah.
You know, people can do with that what they will. There's, you know, there's garbage all over the streets. What's another heap of trash? Jesus.
He can hang out with Ari for like a year, you know, just him and Ari hiding from everybody.
Ari Shaffir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he still hiding from the Kobe thing?
I'm curious how the comedy store is going to change after this, because I heard that Eleanor Kerrigan's booking it now, which is going to be interesting. So I don't know if that's true or not. That's just what I heard.
I don't know who that is. We got to move on to the next story, though. The CDC changed its mask guidance for vaccinated people, which is, you know, cool and like that it's hopeful. Like, oh, the vaccine seems like it's working. But also it sucks because it's impossible to enforce. And it just creates a lot of confusion. Like, what are people supposed to do? Oh, just take people's word for it that they're saying they're vaccinated.
I was at the weed shop this morning, and this middle-aged Caucasian gentleman rolled up to the younger dreaded masked security guard, and he said you got to wear a mask in the shop. And he's like, even if you're vaccinated and I got a health condition? And I was like, You've got neither of those things, and you were never going to wear a mask in the first place. Like, they're just using it as an excuse now. They're just saying, oh, I'm vaccinated.
No, you're not. Fuck off.
It's the same people that was like, I have health conditions. I can't wear a mask.
What's ironic is the people wearing the masks are probably the ones that are vaccinated. But it's the people without the mask that aren't vaccinated. That's the ironic part.
The anti-maskers now. Oh, so to clarify, the CDC basically said that people who are vaccinated don't need to wear masks in most situations unless it's like a very large, dense crowd. Then that's when you should put on a mask, which, you know, that does kind of make sense. But it's just not, you can't enforce that. And not enough people have been vaccinated at this point where you can just be like, yeah, lift the restrictions. It's just,
I mean, in some states, in some parts of some states.
Yeah, but there's still travel and shit, you know.
Absolutely. But, like, the thing is like.
I mean, I know you can't keep them around forever. I get that.
And we're playing a silly game where it's like, okay, well, then people who are vaccinated are just going to have to worry about being protected themselves. But then everybody who's not vaccinated is helping contribute to fucking more dangerous strains of the virus that could eventually make the vaccine work. And then we got real fucking problems.
It's, my favorite thing, two things. One, I like that a lot of these people who are refusing to get vaccinated and refusing to wear masks, like, well, it's my choice, are also the same people who, like, when you talk about, like, the obesity epidemic are like, well, they're just, you know, their unhealthy choices are like ruining the system and costing the whole system tons of money because they're choosing to be unhealthy. It's like,
have you ever tried to eat on $20 a week and the only things within a half a mile or walking distance or reasonable bus distance?
Oh, I'm aware.
Are McDonald's, 7-Eleven.
7-Eleven and like a shitty bodega. Yeah, no, I'm aware. I worked in a food desert.
They don't have healthy options within their budgets. When you need calories daily and you can get two McDonald's double cheeseburgers for $4, you could buy a head of lettuce. You're going to buy a cheeseburger.
You can have like two cups of noodles for $1, you know?
Right. And you wonder why they have high blood pressure and are fucking, you know, obese in all the wrong ways. And it's like, because they're fed cheap, terrible food because that's their only option.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing too is now the anti-maskers are demanding our social distancing and wearing masks because they have a theory that people who are vaccinated are shedding the spike protein.
Well, good. Good. I mean, as long as they're masking and social distancing, I guess, but they won't get the vax because the vax is the real problem. Yeah, that's just.
I wanted to say one more thing.
Oh, go for it.
It's not just what's around, but it's what you're allowed to buy on EBT. You know what I mean? It's the amount of money that they give you on EBT so that when you go to the store, if you get a bunch of vegetables, that's too much money on your card.
Yeah. And it's also like if it's. Like, there's just restrictions on the type of food you can buy. Like, you can only buy certain kinds of bread. Yeah, but you can only buy certain kinds of bread. You can't buy cheese unless it's, like, pre-sliced or block. Uh-huh. There's just these stupid rules. And it can't be, like, certain kinds of cheese. You can buy potatoes, but they can't be, like, in a bag. It's confusing too.
You can buy potatoes, but they can't be in a bag. You're not allowed to get the
stupid shit.
Potatoes.
WIC is like that too. When you're on the WIC program, it's the same thing. Like, you have to, when you go shopping, you have to read the packages for how many ounces are in it so that you could get the right stuff.
Because only certain products are qualified WIC products. And if they're
exactly.
Use other money, right? We live in a terrible, terrible country. We are undereducated, malnourished, yet have the most the highest density of wealth on planet Earth in our upper class, and the most robust military in the history of humans. Somebody could close down a pipeline from a laptop in fucking St. Petersburg. But fucking, we have all these. We've spent $8 trillion on fucking. Military power in the last decade.
Okay. Next up, Liz Cheney was voted out of the third position in the Republican Party This is the second time that they voted to remove her because basically she had the audacity to be like, no, Biden won. Biden won. Yeah. So shut the fuck up.
And January 6th was a violent insurrection, not a tourist event.
Leave it to the fucking MAGA GOP to make one of the fucking Cheneys a martyr for something that's like, good shit, you know?
Yeah. It's like having to like Bush because Trump's such a fuckhead. And now it's like, we got to be on the same side as Liz Cheney. Dick Cheney's like one of my top five least favorite.
And she like disowned her sister or some shit. Like not disowned, but like her sister's gay, right? And she like wouldn't come out in favor of gay marriage so she could win office in like 2014 or some shit.
Yeah, I remember
that. Sold out her sister.
American politics are fucking disgusting. And honestly, the good news is it's somewhat of a reflection of the fact that we still have somewhat of a functioning democracy. But
they did the same thing to us with the Arizona Senator, John McCain. Like left-wing people, we don't really like John McCain, but they were bashing him so much and he's a war hero. Like,
now I gotta fucking defend John McCain.
Yeah.
He called his wife a in front of reporters.
Do you think, let's get an answer out of you two. Do you guys think the Civil War in the Republican Party is a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know yet.
Right?
Right now, you're talking about right this moment, Civil War?
Yeah, I'm talking about
the factions in the Republican Party.
The Cheneys and the traditional conservatives who were never Trumpers trying to remain a part of the party and retain power in the party versus this new pro-Trump detached from reality wing of the party that seems to be really taking over.
I think it was inevitable.
Yeah, I think it was just going to happen.
It makes me feel like Trump really was always working with the Clintons and the Democratic establishment, because it's a death march for the Republican Party. Like, they can't sustain like this, and they're just going to.
I mean, unless they're successful in implementing minority rule, that's really like the only goal. Unless they're successful
in implementing minority rule, but I find that to be not a good bet. Let's put it that way.
So one of the things I think is interesting, you know, there's all this like anti-cancel culture shit that they spew all the time, always. And then they tried to oust Liz Cheney in February and it wasn't it was a secret ballot and she won. And then so for this time around, not a secret ballot. You had to hand raise. People would know who you are.
So there would be political repercussions. But yeah,
and of course, because of that. Because they're all cowards.
I understand, but then that's going to set a precedent for other stuff. Mm-hmm. These guys are fucking opening up doors they don't want to open, man.
No, they're walking. Yes, they are. Well, they opened those doors long ago. Now they're just in the room.
They just want to get paid, and their legacies mean nothing in American politics. Whatever you do for those 4 years or 8 years, you're not held accountable anyway.
Yep. They're all angling for their next job.
Exactly.
Like that's what, you know, Elise Stefanik or whatever, the person who's replacing Liz Cheney, like started her career as like a moderate Republican, but you know, she's smelled blood in the water and she knows which way the winds of the party are blowing. So she has become increasingly Trumpy over time. And then Liz Cheney's seat was up and she's like, my turn. I get to move up the ladder.
Yeah,
I will say the things.
These people aren't public servants; they're career politicians or attempting to be, and that's what's unfortunate about it. It's just all coming back to real, basic, simple shit, which I guess is a good thing. You know,
it's the new Gingrich playbook.
Damn.
Fix the rules and fucking attack, attack, attack.
Yep. It's the,
you can't attack your opponent, attack the rules. It's fucking wild.
Yeah, if it's like in law, if you don't have an argument, if you have a case, you argue the case. If you don't have if you don't have a case, you like argue the law or the process.
Fancy lawyer.
If you don't have either of those things, you just pound the table.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know the exact thing.
Oh, boy. All right. So the Republican Party is in disarray. What's next?
Yeah. More Republican disarray. What's his name? Joel Greenberg is pleading guilty and cooperating with authorities.
Matt Gaetz totally had a 17-year-old bottom bitch that he used to hoe out to all his homies. He's wild.
Yeah. These guys are wild. Absolutely 100%. Underage sex trafficker, child sex trafficker. 17. Sorry, there's no arguing that you. It's okay to prostitute out a 17-year-old. You might be able to argue like a 20-year-old shouldn't go to jail for hooking up with a 17-year-old, but like a 38-year-old, like paying for a 17-year-old for sex. No,
not only paying for that sex, letting all they were tossing her around.
Yeah, no bullshit. No.
They were helping. They've been doing that pay her forever too.
I know.
They've been doing forever.
Brazen.
Yes, Matt Gaetz is certainly not the first representative to pay to have sex with an underage person. Absolutely not. No. But he is extremely brazen and just doing his crimes out in the open and leaving a public digital footprint and shit. And like his accomplice wrote a letter to fucking Roger Stone detailing out his crimes so they could get pardoned.
Roger Stone is guilty of the same shit.
Oh, I'm sure Roger Stone is. Roger Stone, yeah. Have you seen how he dresses? He dresses like that, a fucking 60s Batman villain.
That's the guy with Nixon tattooed on his back, correct?
That is the guy with Nixon tattooed on his back. He also dresses like the Penguin in the Adam West Batman.
Ew. Yeah, you can find a lot of stuff online of people that have been abused by him.
I'm sure. They're all pieces of shit. Powerful people, man. It's just they do what they can get away with.
But the narrative is that all the Democrats are children pedophiles, but that doesn't seem to be the case, does it?
I know it doesn't. Guess what?
That's their playbook. Call your enemy what you are.
Guess what? The longest serving Republican House Speaker, convicted pedophile.
Fucking Trump had 13 underage rape cases.
I'm aware.
13. 13. Yeah.
But Dennis Hastert was the House Speaker for like 7 years, longest serving Republican one in history, and was like a serial child molester from like his days as a wrestling coach up until basically he was elected to office.
Then Jim Jordan, wrestling coach, who liked to turn his head when his players were getting molested. I mean, these guys are all really nasty, creepy fucks.
Yeah,
Hastert was like a
high school coach.
They're 100% backed up by the church and the Catholic Church, who also is dirty as fuck. So
the Catholic Church has gotten a little more complicated these days because the Pope seems to actually want to do something about this shit. But the rest
of the power structure is like, nah, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rest of the power structure is like, we had a good thing, you're fucking it up.
Yeah, you're also like, you know, weakening how we look, and a lot of the clergy power structure runs in the same circles as this like white male power structure that we're talking about with the Republicans. It's all kind of they all play together. Mm-hmm. Whether they're all doing the same things at the same time, always they're always on kind of the same team white male.
Yeah, when it comes down to it,
I have to agree with that.
White male Christendom.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's like, if you're on that team, you're together, and they're kind of together. So that's that.
All right. Next story. The country's largest gas pipeline was hacked.
Oh, yeah. This was a doozy, and it's just going to come and go. Do you think they paid the ransom?
They did.
I think so. Yeah. There's really, like, ransomware is, like, really hard to get out of. Like, unless you have like really robustly backed up your systems in like an inaccessible place, like you're kind of stuck. And I, as part of my job as a content marketing writer for a commercial computer company that sells computers to like businesses and like hospitals and stuff, I've been doing quite a bit of research on like industrial cybersecurity. And oh my God, most companies are years behind where they should be. So this is not entirely surprising. That's something
they rent their network out for porn.
Well, you know, it's the companies. They always are trying to cut corners where they can. And if it's fine now and you can save money by not installing all this security stuff and putting in all these redundancies, they will. And most of them are in it. They're not like tech geeks. They're in it for the money more than, especially if you're not like oil company people aren't like tech people. They're oil company people.
Right.
Oil industry's been around for over 100 years now. Like they're from a lower fi world. They've been using computers for decades, but it's just, you'd be surprised how far behind like major industrial companies are. But let me read this. This is from Morning Brew. It's a news aggregation service. It's kind of like the skim. The company's largest gasoline pipeline is mostly out of commission after the system's operator, Colonial Pipeline, got hit with a ransomware attack. On Thursday, the hackers reportedly stole nearly 100 gigabytes of data from Colonial's computer systems and locked up its computers to demand payment. Colonial shut down the pipeline on Friday as a precaution. And as a result, people have been hoarding gasoline in fucking plastic bags
and boxes.
And like Rubbermaid containers.
Trying to fill a cardboard box with gas. Jesus Christ.
In fairness, some of the videos and photos are like videos of people doing stupid shit like 3 years ago, and they're like changing the date on it and shit.
Fair enough.
But still. I saw one guy filling, I don't know if it was a staged photo, it was a joke or something, but it was like a guy filling like just a Home Depot bucket of gasoline and another dude standing in front of it with an AR-15.
Yeah, I saw that.
Mad Max.
These are not Democrats.
And it's like there were areas that were having gas shortages for a few days in the Southeast, but it's not anything like the 70s where it was just like months of like, well, my license plate has an odd number, so I can't get gas today by law.
It's all bullshit.
Sitting in line.
It's all bullshit. When they raised the gas prices on us because of this, that's bullshit because we produce gas that we can give to our people in emergencies.
We sell it to other nations. We do, and also it's quarantine's ending. We had a bunch of people not driving for months, and now they're all driving again. So of course, gas is going. You remember, like last April, fucking American like shale crude was trading at -$ per barrel for a week or some shit. Like that.
Gas has always gone up. We're gonna see $5 gas in California this summer. I mean, it's always been going up. It's always going to go up. It is what it is. The days of $2-3 gas are gone. And
Biden is making it more expensive on purpose is what's happened.
So that's totally what it is. Because that's what every president wants to do is see high gas prices. They don't want to see high gas prices. My point is do we think that they paid the ransom and did they pay it? And do you think that's a problem? And do you think
it is a problem? It's
hackers are what they say they are, which is Robin Hood types, which they said they won't hack certain types of things.
No, they say that to cover their butts. They're criminals. They're thieves. They just want money for whatever reason. If they're state actors, they want it for that reason. If they're not, then they want it just for money.
And it also proves how fucking fragile our infrastructure is.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Because what if they do six of those attacks at once on six different fucking gas companies?
Yeah. Thankfully, it seems like the group behind this, they're called Dark Side, which is like good branding, bro. They've gone underground. Like they're not. The feds are after them and they're in hiding. Yeah. No, but I mean, they had like a public face. They were kind of like a semi-public operation. It's because they're Eastern Europe. They thought that they would get away with it. But now they've disappeared from the internet. And
that's what happened after you get paid.
There's not the only people who make ransomware. Like,
I heard it was only from anywhere. I heard they only got $5 million.
It's a lot of money for some people.
Shut down an American pipeline? $5 million bucks?
That's just it? As like a proof that you can do it?
I know, but if it's your if it puts you in hiding for the rest of your life, that's not a very healthy score.
It's also possible that they didn't intend to shut down the pipeline. They just wanted to shut down like this company's servers or something. It's possible they didn't think that it would have a downstream effect like that. Possible, I don't know.
If you just go after $5 million, it's less likely they're going to search for you as hard.
Yeah, that's true too.
Maybe that's what the number
is. And also, you know, I'm sure that the company paid it, assuming they would get like insurance to cover their ass. It's, you know.
No, absolutely. But usually in America, when potential state actors attack critical infrastructure, kind of considered an attack on America, and we've always said we don't pay ransoms and negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah, but there's no way to, like I said, a lot of companies are woefully behind on their cybersecurity, and unless they have like everything massively, like super securely backed up, like there's no way out of ransomware attacks. You have to pay it, and you just hope you get your money back and they get caught. Like, in the interest of just getting the system back up as quickly as possible, rather than waste the time trying to recover the data and maybe failing a few times, you just pay it and get it back up.
No, I understand.
Plus, that system of not paying ransom, that's, you know, everything's different. Every time you're held hostage, it's a different situation with different, you know, consequences.
Yeah, dude, I think you're always... I'm just seeing a continued weakened American state.
It's a problem. It's definitely a problem. Okay, we got to move on though to Israel Palestine. We got about 20 minutes to talk about Israel Palestine.
Ding 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 ding.
Let me real quick, just so no one can accuse me of delivering facts in a skewed way. I'm going to read directly from the Wikipedia about the most recent series of events, so that we can at least get dry facts out there before we start commenting. Okay?
Okay, good.
All right. Mm. On May 6, 2021, Palestinians began protesting in Jerusalem over a forthcoming decision in the Israeli Supreme Court regarding the eviction of four Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah, I'm sure I'm pronouncing this incorrectly, a neighborhood in East Jerusalem. The area is informally annexed to Israel, but under international law remains part of Palestinian territories, which Israel administers under belligerent occupation or military. That's just the way the British refer to military occupation. It doesn't mean it's not an emotionally loaded phrase. The protests quickly escalated into violent confrontations between Jewish and Palestinian protesters. The following day, the major Islamic holy site in the holiest to Judaism, known as the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound or Temple Mount, was stormed by the Israeli police with explosives, fire exchanges, rubber bullets, and stone throwing. The violence coincided with Kedar Nights, observed by Muslims, and Jerusalem Day, an Israeli national holiday. The confrontations occurred ahead of a planned Jerusalem Day march by far-right Jewish nationalists that was later canceled. More than 300 people were injured, mostly Palestinians, drawing international condemnation. The Supreme Court ruling was then delayed for 30 days as the Attorney General of Israel sought to reduce tensions. On May 10th, two Palestinian militant groups, Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, began firing rockets into Israel from the Gaza Strip, hitting multiple residences and a school. Israel launched airstrikes against Gaza, including airstrikes targeting multiple apartment buildings and a news office building. That just happened yesterday. Since the rockets, launches, and airstrikes began, at least 122 Palestinians have been killed, including 31 children, while 7 Israelis have been killed, including one child. On May 11th, the IDF claimed that at least 15 Palestinian casualties were confirmed members of Hamas, and also claimed that some Palestinian civilian casualties were caused by errant rocket launches within the Gaza Strip. As of May 12, 2021, both Israel and the Palestinian National Authority reported injuries to at least 300 Palestinians and 200 Israelis. The conflict is said to have reached a level unseen since the second Intifada about 20 years ago. So
Intifada.
I am terrible at pronouncing words that are not standard English words.
Only thing Brendan can pronounce completely without problems is the Jack in the Box menu.
Yeah. All I'll have the dollar tacos, please.
Tacos. So, go ahead, Rich.
Well, I think you guys should probably chop it up first, right?
Yeah, I mean, sure. It's can you clarify what the great infittata was?
The great second lasagna happened. Yeah. Sorry. No, it happened in it went from 2000 to 2005. It was basically after the failure of the 2000 Camp David summit. Ariel Sharon made a highly provocative visit to the Temple Mount. This is from Wikipedia. The visit itself was peaceful, but as anticipated, it sparked protests and riots in which Israeli police put down with rubber bullets. And it was just like an escalation of tensions. It was all, I remember this all through, like, this was the initial phase of my political development, was during the second infittata, and a lot of my opinions of Israel kind of started to form. I started the second infittata as a 10-year-old who was mostly pro-Israeli, and then by the time they were like building the walls around the Gaza Strip, I was like, oh, but you're taking stuff that was previously not, that's fucked. And then like sort of that's when my opinion started to change. By the time I was in college, I was much more like Israeli. Not that I'm against Israel or think Israel should be dissolved, and like practically that's just not going to happen. It just won't. But it's a lot of like, okay, but that doesn't mean you get to do this. You don't just have a blank check to just do whatever you want. Like, no.
Don't they? They've never been checked in all these years. No matter what they do, they're morally, never checked.
What I mean is morally. Like, okay, Israel has a right to defend itself. That's not, you can't just, there's like, no, you can still cross bounds. I don't, like, even, like there's a reason Gitmo was wrong. Like, yeah, they were alleged terrorists, but they still have rights. Like, fuck off.
They don't see it that way.
No.
And from I'm no expert. I'm no expert on Jewish culture. I love Jewish people. They're, you know, but from the videos that I watch and from the things I've seen, it seems like the religious higher ups are pressing for the things in their book. And
yeah, I mean, there's hardline Israelis and stuff. There's definitely the hardliners, and like the Orthodox people tend to be less. They view Palestinians.
Let me speak as the Steel City Jew, and I have a little bit of understanding about the range of Jewish culture. Jewish people are like any other minority.
Yeah,
they're not a monolith.
Of course.
So, and like any other minority, you have the hardliners that fucking that want to, you know, say fuck everybody. Let's just do it. And then you have the other, the more moderates who are like, we need to work with people other than ourselves to create peace. So they're like everybody else in that sense. The difference between why the Jewish thing is more complicated is because you have an American Jewish culture that on one side, you have Jews that are like Israel over everything. If it's not fucking, you know, and they identify also with white men. Because they make money with white men. So they consider themselves, you know, white almost as Americans.
I consider them white.
Yeah.
Jewish people?
Jewish people are
white. The ones in Israel. I mean,
historically, well, yeah, a lot of them are. So go, Zach, keep going. And then I have.
So the point of the story is to try and say, to talk about Jewish people politically in one stroke is A, just a mistake. You know, there's a lot of different views coming out of the Jewish community about how Israel should function. And I think the difference is if you believe Palestinians are less than. And the Palestinian issue, just so we're clear, is older than Israel. It's older than the state of Israel. And it also has to do with the Palestinian people's relationship to the broader Middle East. And it has to do with Iran, and it has to do with the larger Sunni Muslim, you know, issue in the Middle East, and then the Sunni Shiite issue, the proxy wars between Saudi Arabia and Iran. I mean, it's a fucking mess, man.
So specifically, Sorry, I had to burp there for a second. Specifically, what was I going to say? I lost my thread.
I said it's a mess and it's unsolvable. So please insert
your. Oh, I don't think it's unsolvable. It's, I mean, ultimately, like the video I sent you guys had some great points in it. Like, ultimately, like, when you look at this conflict, no one is talking about like theological disagreements. It's not like it's all about like land more than anything else.
Right, but it happens to be land of a different religion's people.
Right, but it's a conflict of nationalism.
It's about strategic military might. You can't have this conversation about the Israelis and the Palestinians without considering Syrian influence, without considering Saudi Arabian influence, without considering Qatari influence, without considering the fucking proxy war operation of the Iranians, the Iranian-Israeli fucking cold tensions. I mean, it's fucking complicated. It's not just about Jewish people, and it's not just about Americans.
Historically speaking, Zionism emerged in the late 1800s, along with the rest of nationalism. It was nationalism's heyday in Europe, and it's another extension of nationalism. It is ultimately about nationalism. The Palestinian nation is also an outgrowth of nationalism that formed as a reaction to being basically under perpetual foreign occupation through the Ottoman Empire and then through British rule and then through Israeli settlements. And one thing that changed my mind was when the conflict was flaring up in like 2014 or something. Like, there's always been Jewish people in Israel, but in the last 70 years, there's been a massive influx of specifically like European and American Jews, and like they're not
on purpose.
It's like the colonial argument. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
they're using Judaism as a mask for colonialism.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And like, not that these people are illegitimate. It's so like, and I want to play this clip for Michael Brooks specifically. Like, I understand, like, yes, Palestinians have historically done some bad things, but it's so asymmetric in terms of like the amount of power both have. Like, even if Palestinians can ally with the rest of the Arab world, it still doesn't amount to being allied with the American military. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I want to play this clip. I'm going to share my screen. This is late political commentator Michael Brooks. If you're unfamiliar with him, he hosted the Michael Brooks Show. He's co-host of the Minority Report with Sam Cedar for a while. He's a Jewish left-wing commentator. I'm going to play this clip. That's pretty great. Oh, let me make sure that the audio is sharing too. That would be smart. Share audio. Boom.
And is supported.
So it's not a complex issue. Oh, that's the audio
I'm not playing. What the fuck?
You could do it, Brendan.
So
we believe in you.
So it's not a complex issue. That's the big thing. It's super.
Ah, simple. Here we go. Can you hear it?
Yes.
No, I can't.
I could. Now I can't.
Welcome to the Boomer, the Bad Lips Boomer Technology Hour.
With the youngest guy here at the helm, always blaming everybody.
Hey,
how are you going to be my lawyer when you can't even do this?
Hey, real talk.
Can you hear it now? Can you hear it now?
No.
No.
Not a complex
issue.
Now I can.
Yes. Okay.
Is supported?
So it's not a complex issue. That's the big thing. It's super simple. There's one group that has enormous power. It's the most powerful country in the Middle East. It's backed by the United States. It acts on another population of people with total impunity and is never held accountable for anything. So there's no symmetry in the relationship, period. And just as like a thought experiment, IDW people, if we know that if somehow a population of Jewish refugees ended up in West Bank and Gaza and an Arabic government in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv had an open air prison in what, you know, Jewish Gaza, which they bombed white phosphorus, they killed civilians indiscriminately, and they had no provisions for medicine, they had an embargo that blocked food, that electricity wasn't running, that there was an over 48% unemployment rate, life expectancy and malnutrition statistics were horrifying. The one of the major policymakers in this hypothetical Arabic Palestinian state said, we need to put those Jews on a diet. In the West Bank, there was another Jewish area where there was a little bit more autonomy, but there was regular Arabic settlements where they pulled up the Jewish farmers' foods. They terrorized them with rocks. The security forces broke children's bones, and they couldn't drive their own roads. We'd all have no problem understanding what that was. So there's nothing complex about it. The second part of your question, it's a pure asymmetry relationship, and the question is rights or not. So that's it. It's not complex.
So, yeah, what do you guys think about that?
I mean, if you relabeled the parties, you'd be appalled. And because it's the Palestinians, everybody never seems to treat them as equal deserving parties. They never have.
And I do have, you know, there are people who take their pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli sentiment to an anti-Semitic place. It happens every time this conflict flares up. And I don't want to be like anti-Semitism is Jewish people's fault, but like the Jewish ostensibly like carrying the banner of the Jewish people nation doing fucked up things certainly doesn't help.
Yeah, there's a movie called Gatekeepers that is probably 10 or 15 years old about how, you know, Israel has in essence become a fascist state, and we've become the monsters we, you know,
we're creating the state to have a place to go to hide from.
Yeah, basically that the Israeli state has become what it was created in response to, and you know, without saying the word Nazi, it's gotten pretty ugly. The way the Mossad operates, the way, you know, the way the authoritarianism has been, you know, constantly.
Some of the rhetoric I hear, like I saw this man on the street video, and I know like man on the street videos are selectively edited to like pull the wildest and most egregious responses and only show those kind of a thing. But like just to hear some of like the borderline genocidal fascist rhetoric coming out of Jewish people, it's really disappointing.
And we've heard that same disappointing rhetoric come out of Americans. And when you've watched some of the videos in response to the carnage in Palestinian neighborhoods, and you see, you know, more white-looking Israelis waving Israeli flags and dancing childishly on around carnage,
like
they look like Trumpers.
Let me read this paragraph.
Trump was their boy.
I'm just saying, like the kind of authoritarian, like fuck the other, like nationalist mentality is applicable in multiple countries. It's not just an American sickness.
Go. Sorry, I'm gonna find a link. Go for it.
Trump overwhelmingly was pro-Israel. He was their like number one president. They have gold coins with his face on it.
Oh, I know. I hate the American right wingers who are pro-Israel just because it gives like their being like a Jewish state gives them an excuse to like call America a Christian state. I hate that shit. Or because they're in it because they want like the rapture to happen.
Yes, it's that whole PragerU mentality of Judeo-Christian value.
Yeah,
and they get it all mixed up.
So they're trying to self-manifest the apocalypse.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they're trying to follow the story of the book and manifest it. It's just annoying. I'd like to
point out that there is one good thing that comes from this. I don't know if it's so much good, but when I'm on BitChute and other platforms where the racists are always there,
mm-hmm.
They're all mixed up right now, because you have to understand right now there is a lot of anti-Semitism in America. It's online.
Yes, and I've seen it.
Those same people don't like Muslims because they're brown and they're Muslim.
Yeah,
and so to see them online, a hard
time picking the sides in this.
Yes, it's been excellent. They don't know what to do.
So, okay. So we're running out of time real quick. I do want to get a couple things in from this Harrods article. If you don't know what Harrods is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing correctly. It's the oldest newspaper in Israel. It was founded, it's still in publication. It was founded in 1918. It's fairly left-wing and it's award-winning paper. It's been around a long time. So like people will often argue, and it's really frustrating because it's like, how do you talk someone out of nationalism? And they'll say things like, well, Israel has a right to defend itself. And then you read stuff where like, there's just like mob violence happening. And I know like Palestinians are doing some stuff too, but like I read paragraphs where it's like and I've seen video of this in the Tel Aviv suburb of Bat Yam, a mob of right-wing Jewish extremists pulled an Arab driver out of his car and beat him. He was evacuated for medical treatment in serious condition. Prior to that event, dozens of right-wing activists marched in the city and attacked a number of Arab-owned businesses. The rioters smashed glass windows, threw objects, and chanted racist slogans. Like, can you imagine if Charlottesville had turned into like they were smashing Jewish businesses and shit? Like,
I could imagine. I'm not surprised. Like,
that's Kristallnacht. And then that was the video of like the two girls like waving an Israeli flag over, like jumping up and down celebrating next to like smash shops and shit. Like
Trumpers. That's what I was talking about.
That's not in the purview of Israel defending itself. Like, I'm Brendan, sorry.
When you started this, you were talking about the court decision that moved those families out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember?
Oh yeah. The Israeli courts will all the time. They never side with the Palestinians. And it's
kangaroo
always,
court. It's kangaroo yeah, it, court it's when it comes to the Palestinians. But the thing is, did you see how they moved them out of the houses?
I'm sure it was horrifying.
They threw them in the street. You know. Now, granted, those Palestinians were not going to leave.
No,
you had to get if you're going to get them out, you're going to have to get them out forcefully. But they do things so disrespectfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate it.
It goes back to what Zach said, that sometimes they think the Palestinians are less than.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, they don't think. They know. It's nothing new.
Yeah. Don't they think that about us too, Zach? As
who?
I'm a Gentile, right? Don't they think I'm less than?
I mean, anybody who's it's not nationalism. Jewish is less than.
Just saying.
There's people that are like really less than. There's dogs and then there's chickens. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying all Jewish people think like that. I'm just saying the hardliners that are using that will use the Holocaust as an excuse to commit a Holocaust because it's again, might is right. We're either the strongest. We're the deadest.
And do you guys think
that's how some people think about it?
I get you. Do you guys think it is psychological trauma from what happened to them?
I do see a lot of that in it. It's a lot of overreacting to threats because of what's happened to Jewish people in the past. Like
Israel is under constant threat from the rest of the Middle East.
Yes, that's very true.
They've been attacked. Their elderly class, when they were young people, fought a war where every citizen had to pick up a gun and fight, because if they didn't, their new country was going to be invaded by every single Arab nation surrounding them. And that
is very true, yes.
That is their elderly class. That is their, those are the Sabras.
And that was the crucible that Netanyahu was made in.
Exactly. And like, that will never be shaken. And they have, you know, their children and a whole political class that has come from that basically says that if we're not in charge, we're dead. And if we're not extremely aggressive in our defense, we're dead. They will come for us the second we're weak enough to be came for. And we can never be that weak again. And, you know, there's an argument for it. But it has, just like the United States, that with great power comes great responsibility. And, you know, human rights and respecting human rights and democracy and people's ability to govern themselves is part of that great responsibility. So they're trying to play both sides of the coin.
I want to get in one more point, and then we got to wrap this up because we're hitting an hour. We were talking about the courts. A lot of times the courts will justify the evictions and stuff on the grounds that like Arab presence dilutes Israel. It's very Jim Crow. It's a lot of Jim Crow talk that were just like the ethnicities and races changed around.
It can't last.
No, I mean, it can under the like boot heel, sure, but like, I don't want it to do that.
It's fear. No, it's fear of the other fucking funneling power to authoritarian.
And Netanyahu's like under corruption charges, so of course a crisis is good.
Right.
I wanted to say one thing that is pro-Israel is that another one of the problems is that in all this time since Israel was founded, no Muslim country has offered to take the Palestinians in. So that is a problem too. You know, they don't even have anywhere to go. Their own people aren't supporting them leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, and then there's the arguments over like right to return and all of that stuff too. Cause there's a lot of Palestinian exiles who might want to come home.
They can't leave and they can't come home. And that them not being able to leave isn't all Israel's fault, because Iran, Iraq, they should allow those people over there if they want to go, and they don't.
Jordan, Syria,
Qatar, all of them.
Well, because they're like Shia, right? And it's a whole fucking thing.
The Middle East is a fucking mess, and it always has been.
That's a good place to leave it. This was a good conversation. I enjoyed this a lot.
I'm just waiting for the Italians.
I mean, my joke solution, I was telling this to Zach, is you negotiate a ceasefire, wait for the ice caps to melt, and then you give the Jews the land in Antarctica. There's no one there. They can do whatever they want with it. And it'll be warmer, so they won't have much to complain about.
Except for that little thing called Jerusalem.
I'm aware. It's just, you know, it's a joke.
everybody have a great Sunday and go watch Kingdom of Heaven with Orlando Bloom, the best Jerusalem.
That's a great movie.
It is a great movie. Rich, do you have any pluggables before we head out?
Just I'm doing a show for Matt Cole in Fullerton on the 1st. In about 3 weeks is my time on my schedule to hit up Zach to do a show, because you don't want to hit him up too fast. I just want to say one last thing. Real Richard Radio 750 on Twitter. I just want to say one last thing. Wouldn't it be crazy if the Italian people of this world suddenly said, hey, we're in the Bible too. We want the entire Roman Empire back. Be pretty crazy, right?
Good luck with that.
Oh my god.
I'm on Bad Libs. More crazy talk. You guys have a good week.
All right, thank you all for listening, and you have a good week.
Later, guys.